All right, so as an outline for this presentation, what we're going to do first is briefly discuss or give some background on what's going on in terms of youth prevalence in Alaska. We'll discuss some factors related to prevalence and then go into the study objective or the purpose behind this particular research. What we will be doing is attempting to model youth prevalence of alcohol, cigarette, and marijuana use. So we will be discussing the three models, the data and methods we use for those models, the results, and then we'll ultimately end up with the limitations and conclusions. So, as a background, here in Alaska, current use of alcohol, cigarettes, or marijuana amongst our youth has two competing narratives going on. If we look at the trend data, one of the things that we can see is that over time, at least since 2007, we've made inroads in terms of reducing prevalence of alcohol and cigarette usage. Now, in terms of marijuana, we've been flat the whole time, but we don't really have a program as of yet really to gear towards reducing those that usage, so it's perhaps unsurprisingly. The other sort of conclusion that we can draw from this slide is that more recently we have seen a flattening in usage. So therefore, we've got some issues going on, and as a Department of Health, there are things that we can be working on to help continue that decline. And that's sort of the impetus or the reason for this particular research. We're looking for other ways or other avenues that perhaps we haven't addressed yet as a way to reducing prevalence in these substances. Okay, so what are the factors related to adolescent substance use? We know that siblings, parents, and peers who use these substances contribute and can increase the probability of students using. We know that the beliefs and perceptions around these substances matter, in particular whether or not they are harmful. We know that parental permissiveness plays a part. And then finally, there are environment and contextual factors that matter. Access is one. Do students have greater access to these substances? If so, there's a higher chance of them using them. Neighborhood level SES, poverty, neighborhood deprivation, that contributes. And then finally is this notion of broad community norms. And when we're talking about community norms, we're basically talking about the accepted rules of the community in terms of what people should and actually do. And this particular notion plays into this research in that we're really looking at what's going on in the community that students see, and does that have a contributing factor, or does that influence their prevalence or their use? So the purpose of this study is to basically it's an exploratory analysis where we're just looking to see is there an association between the community norms and youth prevalence on these three substances. Now, for definitional purposes, community, we're referring to borough level data. A lot of studies have actually looked at more granular neighborhood data. We're looking at the borough level because we think there are, especially in Alaska, Alaska is diverse. And there are different policy avenues that boroughs have in terms of enacting the policies that they can do to help mitigate prevalence. And if we can find that there is something going on at the borough level, then we can address these things by policy. All right. The data set we use, again, we have three different models that we'll present the results to. But the data set we use is the Alaska YRBS, both the 2013 and 2015 pooled together. This is a survey for those who don't know YRBS. This is a survey of high school students. Here in Alaska, it's high school students. The questions on the survey include questions on prevalence of these topics, risky behavior, and other covariates that matter. The pooling of this gives us a sample size of about 13,000 observations and covers almost all the boroughs of the state, but not all of them. And then one of the things that's really important to notice, to note anyways, from a sampling perspective is that the students are nested into classes, which are nested into schools, which are nested into school districts. So the sampling plan that occurs with this survey, many like it, are you have observations that tend to be more similar in nature than dissimilar in nature. Okay, so why does that matter? So the methodology that we use is multi-level modeling, and again, two reasons. One being that the data is nested. And running regular regression, if we were to do that without accounting for the nesting effects, would probably give us underestimated standard errors, and then that obviously causes problems with inference, which means that, you know, the conclusions we draw are incorrect. A second reason for using multi-level modeling in this case is that we have second-level data, not individual-level data that we get from the survey instrument, but second-level data for boroughs. And so I'll outline some of the variables that we use there. This is an incredibly simplistic exploratory analysis, so we're only looking at random intercepts. We're not looking at cross-level interactions. And again, because our measure of prevalence is dichotomous, we're actually going to use logistic regression and present odds ratios. Okay, so our dependent variables, again, for the three different models, the first being alcohol, cigarettes, and marijuana. We look at current use, so we measure that as whether or not a student has used any one day out of the past 30 days. That particular variable, for our purposes, has been dichotomized and transformed so that one, for the research side of it, one is a user and zero is a non-user. Independent variables, and these again are all level one variables. We include age, gender, ethnicity, grades, and physical activity, whether one gets 60 minutes or more of activity per day. School type. So this one's a little tricky, or at least warrants a little bit of discussion. So we have five different school types from the data set. We have traditional school students, correctional school students, charter school students, residential school students, and then alternative school students. So what we've done in this case is actually dichotomized alternative, charter, correctional, and residential, and kept traditional schools as the reference category. All right, and then we have three key measures of norms and perception. They're also in the data. One being parental acceptance. So this essentially is whether or not the parent thinks, or the child thinks, that the parent would be okay with them using smoking cigarettes, drinking one or two drinks per day, smoking marijuana. There's also a coolness measure, which is the perceived coolness if they use these substances. And then finally, there's a harm perception, whether they think that there would basically be any harm had by using the substances. And again, these are dichotomized, whereby the higher the risk category, the more likely that we expect to see the prevalence. Okay, our community norm measures. So we have three separate measures, one for each of the models. So starting out with alcohol, our first measure here is adult alcohol use prevalence, which is measured based off the 2013 and 2014 BRFAS. And basically, this is the same measure of prevalence that we used with, or a similar measure of prevalence that we used with the youth, in that did the adults in the survey use alcohol at least one day out of 30 in the previous 30 days. And again, what we have here are borough level averages. So let's say 20% of Anchorage adults use alcohol. For cigarettes, we took a different track or tact for this particular measure. There are three measures or three variables in the briefest data set that ask, have you seen tobacco use by anyone on school campuses during school hours? Have you seen tobacco use during or after school hours? And then finally, have you seen tobacco use at any school functions that were held off school grounds? So we created a composite measure that accounts for any one of those observations taking place. So again, this is a composite measure of the norm of tobacco use in areas where we shouldn't expect it, and you know, from a norm standpoint, but also from a regulation standpoint. Most of the schools, actually all the schools in Alaska, are tobacco-free. And then finally, for marijuana, we didn't actually have a good level two measure for this. Maybe next year, once we have briefest 2015 data available, we can look at marijuana prevalence. And again, that would be of adults. So instead of using marijuana prevalence, or not having the data actually, we decided to look at the percentage of families below the poverty level guidelines as a testable covariate. Again, this comes from the 2013 and 2014 ACS. All right, so starting with the results with alcohol. So we first tested a null model, basically just to see, is there any borough effects to be had in terms of youth prevalence of alcohol? And what we found was that the interclass correlation was about 2.6%, which means that basically 97.4% of the variation in youth prevalence is due to individual level factors. So what we do, not a lot to work with there, but we went ahead and said, okay, let's just see what the results are when we look at adult alcohol prevalence. And we have three categories of results here. The first grouping are all of the variables that are associated with an increased odds ratio. The middle category are all of the variables associated with a decreased odds ratio. And then the last one are ones that are statistically insignificant. And what we see is that adult alcohol prevalence is a wash. It's not statistically significant. But looking at the other variables, we see an interesting and confirms what the literature finds. At least in Alaska youth, parental acceptance and coolness have about the same odds ratio of affecting prevalence. We also see that correctional schools, alternative schools, harm perception, age, and physical activity are also significant. And then those factors that are more protective in nature, being at a residential school vis-a-vis a traditional school, being a good student, being male, Alaska Native, are all factors that reduce the probability of alcohol prevalence. We also, again, looked at family poverty because we didn't have, we figured that would be a testable covariate just to see what was going on. And what we see here is a little bit counterintuitively, but family poverty, the higher the family poverty in a particular borough, the less likely of alcohol use by students. So it's a little counterintuitive, but again, the rest of the variables are consistent with what we saw in the model that only included adult prevalence. So turning to cigarettes, the amount of variation explained by boroughs is a little bit higher, 10%. So again, we looked at this model, which again is school smoking community norms. And what we see highlighted in yellow is that there is a significant influence or significant relationship between these school-level norms, seeing tobacco use on campuses by adults, faculty members, and other students, and the likelihood that a student will smoke. But we also see that there are larger factors. Being in a correctional school vis-a-vis a traditional school, much, much larger impact. And same with parental acceptance. Again, what we see is the level two variables, which we thought would have an impact on cigarette use, do, but they're really outweighed by the individual level factors. And again, harm perception in this model, the final model was not statistically significant, so it was not included in the final model, but we included it here just for to be consistent. All right, finally, marijuana use. 5% of the variation explained due to boroughs, so not a lot going on, but again, we wanted to see just what was going on and whether or not family poverty levels mattered. And what we found is, yes, they do. So the higher the family poverty level in the borough, a slight increase of using prevalence. But here, if you look at the odds ratios, the most significant odds ratio, the largest odds ratios, see that harm perception at 5.47 was the main driver. If you recall, looking back at tobacco use, it was parental acceptance. So what we see here is that the same variables don't necessarily matter, and they differ depending on the usage, the substance that's being used. Okay, so what are the limitations? Well, there's a lot of limitations, and these are just some of them, but this is the best measure of community norms that we have. It's not the ideal measure of community norms. We could probably come up with 1,000 different other measures, but this was what we had. Moving forward, there's an avenue for future research. Cross-sectional data, so we can't establish causality. And then we don't have data for all the boroughs. It would be nice if we did, but unfortunately we're missing some, so we don't know how that might affect. Conclusions. So we see that social norms do add to our understanding of youth cigarette use prevalence. There was a small association, not as large as the others, but that does mean that those of us in the Tobacco Prevention Control Program can work towards policies that try to mitigate any sort of usage on these campuses and around school functions. We didn't see much going on with alcohol and marijuana, but again, we don't have the best measures, and moving forward, we hope to be able to get something that might find something else different. And then finally, there was a strong connection between prevalence and individual attitudes and norms. we look at the comparison for each of the three substances in use, so we see that, you know, with alcohol, it's sort of, you know, not much difference between parental acceptance, coolness, and harm perception. With cigarettes, parental acceptance really mattered, but less so coolness and harm perception. And then with marijuana, the major driver, or at least in terms of relationship, appears to be harm perception. And with that, we'll take questions. No, it's not. So this is 2015 is the first year that YRBS included a question on e-cigarettes, but we didn't include that.
I was just wondering how you handled missing data with missing observations.
It was list-wise deletion, so list-wise it was deletion. Yeah.
Okay. So. Did you look at the percent missingness? And how that impacted, might have impacted your results at all?
No, we didn't. So that'll be definitely a next step. Sorry.
You might consider multiple imputation.
She asked, how did we deal with missingness? And my response was we didn't. The first response was we used list-wise deletion, and but then we didn't actually look at the differences between those who were excluded. I think we expected that, not so much from a rebellion standpoint, but we expected to see that students do pick up on the cues of, you know, people in the community in terms of, you know, this is what's commonplace and this is what we should be doing, not so much in terms of rebellion. I don't think I answered your question good. Well, I mean, yeah, true, right? But you know, if you see, if what is commonplace, you know, if what you see is commonplace every single day, you know, that's sort of, you know, what is to be expected. So I don't, you know, it wasn't so much that, you know, we would hope that we wouldn't see that. But especially in places at schools and tobacco use on schools, you would hope that, you know, not only from a norm standpoint, but also from, you know, a regulation standpoint, that there would be enough in place to prevent, you know, students being able to see that sort of thing. Oh, boroughs? I'm sorry. Boroughs? Yeah. So, we had 26 in the 2013 and 25 in, so about 51. So the data was pooled together. So the first round covered about 26 of the 29 boroughs. The second round, the 2015 data, included 25 of the 29 boroughs. So again, it wasn't full coverage. But we tried to get, you know, to the extent that we could, especially by pooling, we tried to get as much coverage as possible. I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't. Without going through the motions and actually, you know, checking to see, which is, again, something we will do in the future, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One more.
Yes.
And that was any alcohol in the last 30 days?
Exactly.
Did you give any thought to looking at heavy alcohol use versus any?
Yes.
Somehow defining?
Yeah, in fact, we looked at just generic prevalence. We also looked at heavy use. We looked at the number of drinks, the average number of drinks, mean number of drinks, and median number of drinks. And nothing, you know, nothing was significant. It was a wash on all. Oh yeah, yes, but again, nothing was going on at the adult level. Yeah, And again, you know, one of the other limitations, I guess it's odd to talk about more limitations, but moving forward, we only looked at youth prevalence. So in the future, one of the things that we will look at is frequency, and then again, you know, heavy usage, just to see what's going, if the norms contributed to those factors as well.